break. It's a mini episode.
Hello and welcome to another mini-sode of You Gotta Check This Out with Mike and Dre. I'm the Mike, and this week I bring you a clip from last week when Dre tries to convince me covering Grey's 17 as a key Babylon 5 episode was a good idea. Yeah. I added in some more of our conversation on Melissa Gilbert's doppelganger performance, and also, where did Lieutenant Corwin find an Abercrombie dealer on Babylon 5? And, as a bonus, we figured out what the word of the podcast is. I'll see you on the other side.
Okay, now with our two interruptions in the way, Mike, are you ready for a third interruption before going?
Third interruption? All right, this is a surprise here.
We can call it a Dre's hot take is what I'm going to do. We can call it something else. You can name it whatever you want, Mike, but here's what I got. So here's what I want to do. This is my hot take, and I realized this while prepping for this episode. So for those of you keeping up, the last episode we did was Grey 17 is Missing with the incomparable David Christopher Bell. I'm going to defend Grey 17 is Missing as both an episode, like why the selection. Now, I said this
Dre,
on
good luck. I saw that episode and good luck.
I said this on the actual show. The reason that I wanted to do Grey 17 as an episode for this show, even though we all ubiquitously agreed at the end, you do not have to check it out, was it was a good reason to get David on the show. I am a huge fan of him. I have podcasted him before. Of course, you know, we've put flyers out to guests and he was one of them, but I wanted like a special one for him. And so the worst horror-inspired episode of Babylon 5 seemed to me to be a reason to get him on. And the argument is that and TK are the two worst episodes of Babylon 5. And I would say Grey 17 is Missing is worse because it is the worst, like, important episode. TKO was a season one episode where they're still finding their footing. Nothing matters. So that was it. You know, I defended that on the show. I basically said I wanted to get like the feeling of a movie night on Gamefully Unemployed, which is where one of David's.
So you're saying that Grey 17 is the worst episode just because it was in the middle of a more important part of Babylon 5 where they should have been having more important episodes?
Yes. And I would even say another badly rated episode is in front of Grey 17 is Missing Walkabout, which we discussed the resolution to that, and I was actually going to say, I thought that episode got a much bigger ding just on juxtapose. I think Walkabout is right next to War Without an End, which is amazing. Everybody agrees it's one of the best episodes. And next to this, and it's worse. And so I think like people kind of averaged it to be worse. I didn't think Walkabout on its own was that bad of an episode.
I would give that to you because in my notes, I kept making fun of that the whole time. It's like, is Franklin going to get it on with the dancer? Nope, he's not. Oh, he is. Oh, she turns him down. And that was the entire thrust of the episode for me.
Pun intended. I'll give it to you, Mike. So Grey 17, and we agreed was bad, but it was like, wanted to discuss how bad, wanted a good guest, very enjoyed it. But I'm going to talk about the creative process and why I think it was important. I'm going to argue that Grey 17 is Missing was like a rough draft actually of this finale, because Grey 17 is Missing, its subplot is really Freddy versus Alien, and really more accurately like Alien from a doomsday cult on the station. So it was a horror,
more like Freddy brings on the alien to do mysterious stuff with the cult and it gets out of hand. But
it was basically a horror movie that they wanted to have on Babylon 5, and the cute ending was supposed to be, you know, Garibaldi just shoots him with a gun. And we do discuss in that episode, my two cents is I do feel that a standards in practice or someone said, you're not allowed to fire a real gun. You can fire phasers, but you can't fire a real gun on the show because we have a Chekhov's gun moment. The start of the episode, Garibaldi's holding a giant gun. We have Garibaldi versus a giant alien, and Garibaldi MacGyvers some bullets to kill him, which Dave Bell knew a lot about and was like, that's not even how bullets work. So we agree. I think the original writing was supposed to be him pointing a gun and shooting.
Clearly, yeah.
So anyway, we've talked before also about how JMS has to do this in real time, right? If you're doing a weekly episodic show that's also supposed to be an overarching thing, you don't get to go back in time and say, oh, actually, it would have worked much better this way. The stuff I've done repeatedly on these shows, Mike, I'd be like, oh, you could rewrite it this way. I would love to, but it's out. I don't get to rewrite that draft. It's on air. Everybody's seen it. The Lurker's Guide. But I was watching this episode and going, Grey 17 and this have a lot of the same hits. And I argue JMS got a trial run with Grey 17.
You're going to have to take me beat by beat. Give me a couple beats that you have that line up between Grey 17 and Zod.
Okay, so we get the Chekhov's gun right moment. early, as we already mentioned, there's a moment where Jakar comes in and is, here are some nukes, Sheridan, mm-hmm. right? Beginning of Grey 17 is missing. Zach Allen walks in and Garibaldi's holding a big gun. End of the episode, holy shit, this alien that, you know, our hero has no chance against, right? The shadows, Anna, it's an invasion of the body snatchers, and we'll talk that a lot, are caving in on Sheridan. What's he going to do? And he has the nukes just come full blast at the thing. Garibaldi shoots him. Now, again, this one plays. That scene plays where Sheridan mm-hmm. does the nukes. And we all thought it was a big old dud with Garibaldi. And then, as I mentioned, this is a horror in space theme where it's alien for Grey 17 is missing. It is explicitly listed by J. Michael Straczynski in the director's commentary, Invasion of the Body Snatchers. So both of these are like classic horror in space, Chekhov's gun revealed. And how would this horror play in space? And then also, what if our hero just shot it with a gun at the end?
Yeah, I'm not sure if I go along with that, just because in Grey 17, it was a Chekhov's gun that was set up and not used. And in Zaha Doom, it was a perfectly set up Chekhov's gun.
So that's what I'm saying is that Grey 17 failed mm-hmm. and Grey 17 was muddled for a variety of reasons. Whereas this one played, and what I am arguing creative process-wise is this is a musician with drafts. This is a writer with a rewrite. And I'm saying JMS famously did every single episode for the season, worked himself to death, didn't have a chance to do a walkabout Franklin. Maybe that's why I'd love to do a break. And that's why it's like fantasy to write it for Franklin. And I'm saying when I was watching, I was like, oh, Grey 17 fell on its face and sucked. And we all agree. But this episode is rad. And I was like, oh, he got like a second chance. And this is a well-known thing about artists. So that's like my two senses. I'm saying they're related, but I'm saying he got to see how Grey 17 failed to make Zaha Doom even better.
It's like getting to see how you do on the job and just immediately like correcting yourself, which doesn't happen too often. I'll give you that, but I will give you like the side point even more where, yes, I completely agree that Walkabout is JMS trying to get out of his own prison that he has made for himself of writing every episode.
Franklin's going to have to be the one that plays a little dumb so we don't give it all away to the audience in, you know, scene four.
Yeah, Franklin's always going to play that role where he's going to like, he's the scientific guy on the team that's going to take it from, okay, I'm not going to say she's not who she is, no matter, you know, what it seems like until I have medical proof of it. And even like, as soon as they have the scene, I think that's coming right up where he's comparing the neck scars on it. That's the point where you realize that, okay, it really is what you thought it is. She is a doppelganger going forward. I think that was a very good way to clue the audience in on what's going on without being obvious. Like it's doled out slowly throughout this episode. So you can have that shadow of a doubt that, oh, maybe it is Anna. Maybe she really did escape the shadows.
I'm going to make the argument. I didn't think there was any like gotcha. I thought it did really well in that tension because this entire time you're watching her and you're like, what's going on?
Well, it's like you have to put yourself in, you were talking about this earlier, you have to put yourself in the position of how did I feel the first time I watched this? Because now I've seen this episode like 5 times now. And after the first time, yeah, she's playing the whole time. But like that first time, I was wondering if JMS was going to pull some kind of another rug under out everybody and say, yep, she's being true. But as soon as she starts saying, you got to go to Zaha Doom, I'm all about Zaha Doom, it's pretty obvious what's going on.
I do think a reasonable spot to go to, and they do dance it a little, is, you know, Shadows versus Vorlons, and, you know, who's the good guy, who's the bad guy. There is a lot of interesting there, and she's, you know, she's even saying that to him, like, they didn't tell you, you know, Obi-Wan never told you kind of thing, starting to plant the seeds of doubt that maybe the Vorlons aren't in the up and up. Kosh is gone. The new Kosh has definitely been weird. So I thought that play, and actually does kind of work. We'll get to that. But yeah, it does kind of work. So yeah, that was where I was at.
This guy looks just like Bronson Pinchot from Perfect Strangers too. I thought it was hilarious. My gosh.
If he had done that scene in that voice, I may have died. And then the true story behind that voice is he was a bit part on Beverly Hills Cop. Mm-hmm. And this is a forgettable assistant. I'm not doing anything. And he goes, if I do a funny voice, I steal the scene. And he does. And not only did he steal the scene in Beverly Hills Cop, he gets a sitcom out of it and a career. That's so cool. I do love that. Man, if this actor had done that, we could be seeing the Babylon 5 spinoff with him.
How do they get to Zaha Doom if they can't bring the ship that has Vorlon parts to Zaha Doom? They go on a shuttle. isn't that shuttle part of the ship, though? Wouldn't that also have the Vorlock allergy?
That's the sad one where... So the other thing is, what we could go is twofold. So, okay, I'm going to work this out in real time because I do...
I want to hear this.
You put this on the script and I was like, hey, you're doing my shtick nitpicking the plot holes, but it is a minor plot hole. I think the bigger thing that's more logical is her being correct in saying, we don't want to let a powerful starship into Zaha Doom. So I have to give him a reason that we have to shuttle down. Right. So I think it's her being intelligent. And that does play because we're going to end with that white star blowing up Zaha Doom. And what JMS noted is that if you look, it's going super fast. And the reason is clear. It's going, there should be anti-air defenses on Zaha Doom. They should be worried. So Sheridan's like big ploy is essentially to send a white star at, you know, hyperspeed at warp 9 or whatever straight at the planet, which is like unheard of. So, you know, the easy plan where she's saying, hey, I don't like this. Let's take the shuttle. And he's like, oh, sure, we'll take the shuttle, right? I think her, she's just being more intelligent, saying, I'm not going to trust you with a big gun on Zaha Doom. I did like this. You notice that Lieutenant Corwin is there again, but he's got a nicer... Oh, my God.
This is something I noticed from going forward. In the premiere of season 5, he has a kind of a big walk and talk part at the beginning of that episode. It's like, why is he just wearing an Abercrombie shirt? Did they change so much to season 5? And then when I went to rewatch this episode, it's nope. He was in that Abercrombie shirt is his uniform from this point on.
So yeah, the dorky lieutenant, I guess, who wasn't good enough to get one of the new uniforms. He's cut his hair. He's wearing an Abercrombie and Fitch shirt. And I said, the in-show lore is he got a promotion. He stopped wasting his money on flowers for Ivanova. Yeah. So he upgraded. But yeah, the shadows are there. When we keep talking juxtaposes, intentional or not,
it's our favorite word. It's definitely like the word of the podcast.
If we were going to name this episode, it would be juxtapose.
Juxtapose.
There was a while where Mike was writing a theme song a day, and juxtapose is an interesting... Just, I'm throwing into the ether that juxtapose is an interesting hook.
Yeah, it was a shorter one. I'm spending more time getting back into painting these days, for real. Specifically, Magic the Gathering altars. I started posting some of those over on MikeSlater.com, so go check them out. I'll also be writing this week's column on restarting the altering hobby after 6 years out. If you haven't seen them, I wrote a short article to go with each week's episode, also over on MikeSlater.com. Dre also co-hosts the show Nerd with Jeff May. You can catch those on Jeff May's Patreon at patreon.com/Jeff May. And if you can, please like and subscribe to us wherever you heard this. We'll be back next week with an extra full episode covering the first two episodes of Babylon 5, Season 4, Hour of the Wolf, and Whatever Happened to Mr. Garibaldi. Cheers, all.